Yeah, this is Fancy Ramen. I'm Neil.
Hola, I am Senior Cookie.
And I'm Scott.
Not feeling Bonjour, super... Ça va? No. Yeah. Non. Ça va mal. Is that it?
Yeah, you're right. Ça va mal. It sounds like you're actually doing terrible. You could even say très mal.
I don't know what it is. Like, I think it's whatever I made for breakfast is just tearing me up. I don't feel super great.
What did you make for breakfast?
Green eggs and ham, but there was no food coloring.
Maybe. I don't know. I made like a breakfast quesadilla.
I can dig it. I'm sorry. No more Mexican for you. Only French foods from now on.
Well, I just took a pink little pill, and hopefully that will help me too.
Ecstasy?
Pepto-Bismol.
Speed.
I've always been of the belief that that liquid Pepto-Bismol works better than the pill.
Probably.
But I'm hoping that's not the case because we don't have liquid here.
So why do you, if you thought one was better than the other, why do you keep the, in your case, inferior version?
Yeah. Well, maybe he's not the one making that decision.
Touche. Well, we can make this an early one. A quick one. Quicker one? Quickest one?
Yeah.
Quickish one?
Aside from my gastrointestinal distress, what have you guys been up to?
Go ahead, Cookie.
We invested in some bar stools for our Kotatsu and then just lopped off the bottoms of those bar stools. And they work great as Kotatsu chairs.
So,
oh, Kotatsu.
You got the like regular tall four-legged bar stools, and then you cut off what is probably what 80% of the height. So
yeah.
They're tiny little stools now.
Basically, and they were more of those. You know the fancy bar stools that just have like the one big rounded foot that goes up into the middle of it, and it's on a Lazy Susan.
Oh, one of those?
Yeah, because it was really a lot cheaper than actually buying
the four-leg bar stools.
The four-leg anything, honestly.
I'm actually surprised that that's the case.
Yeah, it was really weird. And, well, the cheaper options weren't as comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also ended up getting a new bookcase where we house all of our board games now. So it's a board game case. And that's all the non-gaming news that I've got for you today.
Let's see. I haven't done all that much. It's the gloomy part of the season right now. So I've been indoors. I've been working on my homebrew D&D campaign. I've finally got time to put in some like quite a bit of time and effort. It's going to be very good. As someone who plays in the campaign, I hope you will enjoy it.
As someone who forgot they were playing in your D&D campaign, I hope I will too.
Yeah, it's your group so doesn't long. Play near as often as the other one. So what's nice, I guess, at least, is that I always have materials and stuff produced for the group ahead of you. And so it's actually even easier to run your guys' stuff because you're always the lagging strand.
Which is weird, because I thought we were the ones that were like meeting on a consistent basis.
Nah.
Based on you putting more people into our group.
Nope.
Well, damn.
How big is their group now?
Well, your guys' group, it hasn't actually really grown, I don't think. It's five people, which is like pretty ideal. And the other group is approximately, I think they actually might, they're at five as well now.
I could have sworn we just picked up two people on the last camp, on the last group, in the last session.
So someone joined the other group, and then I don't know who you're thinking of for your group. Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
It doesn't. Those numbers don't matter. But yeah, five is an ideal number to run with. I think there's normally at least one overlap of role or skill of some sort that keeps everybody from getting dunked on in special situations. And I don't know. It's a lot of fun.
I can take it. Yeah, it's been approximately 1 month since we last ran, as all of our notes are from 9/20.
Oh, yeah. Yep. There's lots to do. I've put together... Well, I don't want to spoil anything on here, and it doesn't really matter. So, I haven't been up to much either, is what I meant to say.
Nice. Oh, I guess I can say that I produced a new song over the weekend, and over the last 2 weeks, and I think it's finally finished.
Is that what you sent through your drive link?
Yeah.
I would say it's done.
I haven't listened to it yet. Maybe I should use it as an intro. Just, you know, for one special episode, for this episode.
You certainly can if you want.
Unless you plan on, like, going through the licensing and stuff, that would mean copy striking it automatically.
No, I will not copy strike your thing. I will not copy strike my own content.
Well, I mean, if you go through BMI or whatever services, I think it actually goes through an automated process.
Oh, nice. I just released my... I'm of the ilk of, if you hear something that sounds nice by me and you like it, if you want to pay me money, you totally can and use it. If you don't want to pay me money, you totally can and then just use it anyway. And I'll be none the wiser. If you give me a shout out, that'd be even better though. Honestly, I'll take a shout out over money. And for those of you listening to the Fancy Realm podcast, I also shaved.
Yeah, you can hear it. Through, you know, less scratches on the mic.
But yeah, that's all the non-gaming stuff that we've been up to. You ready to talk about games, Neil?
I'm trying to... I can't tell if I'm going to be better as we get further into the podcast or if I'm going to be at my best right now and only get worse.
Like, you need to go to the hospital, Neil?
I don't think so.
You look like you're dying.
I feel like my tolerance for pain is pretty low. So like if I can sit through an episode of a podcast, it can't be that bad, right?
I don't know. I've sat through life while needing to get an appendectomy that very same day. So, you know, you never know what's wrong with you until you go to the doctor and they're like, how you feel about that organ that's inside your body?
Wait, an appendectomy? Is that when your pancreas gets removed?
No, your appendix.
Appendix. Oh, right. appendectomy. Okay, that makes sense. I can really quickly just say a few short blurbs. I put a little more time into Beat Cop. I finished Final Fantasy Tactics on stream, so I was like surprisingly quicker than I expected. There's just a lot of side content that I never unlocked the ability to do, and before I knew it, I was at the boss thinking that like I was just at another segment that would lead me to the final chapter of the game. But I was like, whatever, it's cool. I'll play some Beat Cop while I wait for my next game to download. And I might have brought up Beat Cop to like a very small degree before, but if I did, I hope I made the comparison. It's the cop version of Papers, Please. And by that, I mean, instead of hanging around in a border patrol or border entry building, you have your own block or a couple blocks that you are on the beat on, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And the comparison actually is way more fitting now that I've played some, because it really is the situation where like you have so much that you're able to do or that you're asked to do, and you just don't have enough time to do everything. So aside from like, and it shares a lot of design elements in that like Papers, Please, you have to, which you haven't played it, you're a border entry person. You basically check people's documents out and let them into your country or deny them. And the core mechanic of that game is that the more people you process, the more money you make, which allows you to not let your family starve in Soviet Russia. I mean, Artotska or whatever. Ostotska, whatever the fictional
Ostroitska?
What's that?
Is it a Stroitska? Ostroitska?
Whatever it is, it's a fictional country. But
that has, yeah, that has no similarities to our concept of Soviet Russia, of course.
None whatsoever, or any neighboring countries that could be referenced. I mean, not referenced.
I found the name Arstotska.
Arstotska. Yes, that sounds right. Beat Cop is similar in that you have a base amount of pay every day, and if you don't do your quota of violation tickets, be it parking, tires, or lights, that you get docked. And if you double your quota, you get a small bonus. So it's like similar in that regard, that like the one thing keeping you busy as you play through your day is checking these cars repeatedly, towing cars and all sorts of things like that. But on top of it, just like how Papers, Please has like this story that kind of touches on the concept of morality, in Beat Cop, you're a disgraced detective who's been framed for a murder and the theft of diamonds from the senator's mansion. So as you're going
through... But you still keep your job.
You get demoted down to essentially a parking meter patrol guy.
So what you say is, if I do that, if I become a detective, I can steal diamonds from the mayor's house, keep my job for a year, then retire, hawk the diamonds, and be a millionaire.
I mean...
Right. Potentially. Yeah, and a pensioner.
The problem is that, like... Okay, so I'm assuming that we have... that we are in the protagonist's shoes, and the opening cutscene kind of shows this out to some slight degree in like a stylistic pixel art way. It doesn't seem like he steals anything. It doesn't seem like he steals the diamonds. He kind of just gets called to the scene for reports of gunshots, sees a dead guy, and then sees the house has been broken in, but he's getting framed for all these things. Whether or not that's actually true, I don't know. The game could be pulling a fast one on players, but that's yet to be seen.
He's also framed for murderers in addition to this heist.
Yeah, he's framed for shooting this person that was found on the scene, who might have been the culprit, who might have been someone breaking in. Who knows? I don't recall if there's details given. That part's kind of, I mean. The aspect of the crime doesn't matter so much, it seems like, as to what you do about it, if that makes sense.
Okay.
And the game is very stylistically meant to like mimic an 80s, like 80s trashy cop movies, if that makes sense. In that, like, there's a lot of, not a lot, but there are like a few crude lines. That I think are supposed to kind of put the game... It's like the game is not supposed to be racially insensitive, but I feel like the game uses some lines to place the story in the 80s, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so it's racially insensitive.
Yeah, basically. It's like it is kind of bothersome in that no characters really seem to stand up to some of the language used. We're not saying N-word, but we like I do see D-word.
Damn?
No, like it, as a racial slur. I don't even know if
it's
like
type this out. You're gonna have to type this out because you can't say it on air. Just
right,
in case
right.
It offends somebody.
So this is where
but
like
I'm kind of curious as the black person who likes to collect racial slurs.
I don't know if this is actually a slur or like let me put it this way. I don't know if it's actually a slur that was used in America, if that makes sense.
For those who are curious, it's pretty much the Dave Chappelle skit with fucking Rick James talking to Eddie Murphy and Charles Murphy, except for instead of it being darknesses, it is darkies. Sorry. Oh, fuck it. I don't care.
Well,
that's
hilarious. I mean, I would
I'm also racially insensitive.
I would say that, like, it's obviously not necessarily as bad as the N-word, but at the same time, Like, it's still, like, me just reading it makes me feel insensitive. But at the same time, like, I can't remember reading this or hearing this as, like, a slur. But it's totally a slur. You know what I mean?
No, it totally is. But, you know, if you want to find, like, real good racial slurs, just watch any Clint Eastwood movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They've got ones that it's just like, oh, man, that's a racial slur. I'm like, wait, what did he just say to that black person? Holy shit. Oh, that's a great one.
Clint Eastwood, the racist film savant.
Ah, so good.
Or should it be the racist savant in film? I don't...
But so it's kind of hard to know exactly, like, if it's appropriately used or not, because it doesn't seem like the game is necessarily... I'd like to think that the game is not actively against people of African descent. Like, I'm trying to be as PC as possible here. Your sergeant is black. You have, like, when you catch criminals, whether it's shoplifting or anything, whatever, generally you have police officers come and take them away. It seems like granted it's pixel art, so you can only tell based upon the 5 pixels of skin that you can see.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like the officers tend to be racially diverse in your officer pool, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, the two entities or groups that you have to deal with on your block are known as the crew, which you can totally take like a racial stance on that. Like, that is exactly what it's supposed to be, right? Because this is New York, like 80s New York gangs. And then you have the Italians. And the Italians, obviously mafioso. And the game is, like, aware of the racial profiling of this era, too. Because, like, pretty early on, one of your police buddies ends up getting gunned down. Or not even a police buddy. It's your first day on the job and you meet this person. He gets gunned down by a group that everyone associates as part of the crew. And when your character goes up and tries to intimidate people for information, they're like, dude, just because, like, the shooters were black doesn't mean they're part of our gang. All right? But, like, kind of... getting past that, I feel as if the story is at least going in an interesting, shitty 80s movie style plot twist. Like, there is some sort of conspiracy going on in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And the gameplay is kind of, it's pretty enjoyable. It kind of sucks having to meet your ticket quotas every day. And the most interesting part, I think, is trying to manage your relationships between the police, the public, the mafia, and the gang there, because I'm assuming if you let your relationship drop too low, and they have meters from negative 100 to positive 100, if you let your relationship drop too low out of any of those groups, I'm assuming you're going to get a game over, be it from someone murdering you or getting kicked off the force or whatever the case is.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that the like the minor ticket violations that you have to distribute in order to earn money or, you know, make it to the next day in the game are essentially there to add like pressure or time constraints to unraveling the like more interesting portions of the plot in the game?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I remember reading some of the Steam message board posts about people asking for a mod that would basically slow down the passage of time. And the developers are all very vocal in saying that, like, they made the game this way so you would feel pressured with time and realize that you can't do everything that people ask you to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't think it's in the best interest of design for the game to let you do everything either, because that would mean, like, a lot of the things I could kill time in that game aside from the tickets are taking requests from the mafia or the gang, and like, let's say someone's saying that, hey, we need you to we need you to act as a courier, bring this over to this place on the street, that sort of thing. And like, just the act of walking down the street takes a while unless you decide to start running. And if you do run, it lowers your stamina. You have a stamina meter and you have a stamina stat. The stamina stat, I think, resets every day and is built up based upon eating food, like from the diner or at the donut shop.
Wait, it gives you more stamina to engorge yourself on a bunch of food?
I'm really wondering if there's going to be, if there's some counter going on in the background that that
eventually,
like,
your character goes from skinny to fat.
Well, I'm thinking more along the lines of diabetes even.
Yeah.
because multiple times the joke gets played that, like, your ex-detective, now beat cop, Jack Kelly, does not want to eat all of these donuts. And there's even like an event that happens where you take a bunch of donuts to an old woman's house and then end up trying to, like, she wants you to order 12 donuts, so you take them, and since she has either dementia or some other problem, some other disability, she doesn't remember asking for that many donuts, so you're forced to keep eating the donuts or trying to find other ways to get rid of the donuts.
Nice.
And the result is basically that it has, like, along with the fact that I try to avoid donuts when I can to in real life, it makes me have like some sort of in-game fear that if I eat too many donuts, I'm going to end up getting Jack Kelly killed off because of health concerns. But that doesn't stop me from going to the donut shop during my morning patrol because they're always free. And they also don't waste time. Whereas if you go to the diner, which is also free, it kills 15 minutes, I think. 10 minutes for breakfast, 15 minutes for lunch, and 20 minutes for dinner.
So the hidden meter really isn't, you know, pleasing the crew or the mafiosos as much as it is, like, keeping your blood pressure down.
Right. And the game does find other ways to pressure you into feeling like you have to do the traffic tickets too, and that you have mm-hmm. to pay alimony to your wife,
of
your
course.
Now divorced / separated wife, which in typical 80s bullshit way, the alimony keeps getting larger and larger, which I think incentivizes the player to be a dirty cop because it seems like it would be much easier agreeing to help the mafia or the crew out and making some easy money that way. But I frankly have found that, like, I haven't been caught by IA doing anything yet, but because I know, because they constantly
IA,
remind
internal
you,
affairs.
Yes.
Yes.
They keep reminding you that internal affairs are potentially on the streets running like undercover stings, that I have not done any of those things yet.
Mm.
With like the exception of occasionally I've sold information, because I feel like selling information is it doesn't hurt my street. Like, maybe you'll get a word from one of your coworkers before you mm-hmm. go on your beat that, hey, they're planning on like raiding some of these mafia storehouses and precinct whatever. And my thought process is, well, if I tell the mafia guy here, it's not going to affect my street. And that's $100 or that's $50 right there. That's, you know, 1/6 of my alimony payment.
Mm-hmm. And so, since the guy that my wife left me for is in Precinct 9 where this raid is happening, I think, you know.
Fuck him.
But there's just a lot of weird, crude humor, too. Like, going up to, there's a Catholic church or cathedral or whatever you want to call it, and when you go in and talk to the father, I don't know if it was just a one-time event or if it maybe is randomized, but when I went in and talked to the guy, because I usually want to just perform checkups, I don't know if that actually matters or anything, mm-hmm. The father was like, oh, I swear I was just with him for a moment or something like that.
Huh.
and Jack Kelly is like, no, I just came in to say hi. Oh, right. Oh. Geez, Father, you're looking awfully pale right now. You should maybe, like, take a break or something. Like, to Jeez. Insinuate that the Father is doing something very bad.
Yeah, the game is very crude. Jack Kelly does invite him into the confessional on the other side. and says, "What can I do for you, Father?"
Forgive me, officer, for I have sinned.
Yeah. But this one's going to be off the record.
The game is definitely crude. I'm just really interested to figure out exactly what's going on with the stolen goods, and then I think I'm bailing out. I'm not really that interested otherwise. And then very quickly, I started playing The Alliance Alive. It's a 3DS game that was remastered, HD remastered, and then ported to the Switch. It is a pretty chill, casual RPG so far, and that's been pretty nice. Made by the scenario writer is the guy that essentially created the Suikoden series, which are games known of, you know, like political slash magical strife and having like a strong element of like rebellion or revolt, resistance, that sort of thing. This game, unsurprisingly, is about humans rebelling or resisting their daemon slash beast overlords. Much less realistic than the Suikoden series, but so far I'm getting a good kick out of just like the way the story is being told and so forth. I'm not really expecting like huge or amazing story writing, given that it started as a 3DS game, but I might be surprised.
Mm-hmm.
What have you guys been playing?
After you, Scott. After you.
Man, I've dipped back into Dishonored 2 for my second playthrough. Playing through the Emily, or not playing through the Emily path. I guess it's the same path playing through as the character Emily Caldwin instead of Corvo Otano. So besides like playing with the different mechanics of this character and also trying to do it in a more violent route than the like stealthy, non-violent, attempted pacifist route, which I don't think I made due to, you know, I think the last time some errant explosions or accidentally placing an unconscious body near some hungry rats. this time I'm kind of on the opposite end of the scale where if someone can be eliminated most easily with a long distance crossbolt to the head, or probably my favorite power, pulled from afar into my like into my reach with her like essentially tentacle movement ability, then I'm gonna opt for that as opposed to the much more difficult like drop from above or spend like half a minute choking out a guard and then gently laying him apparently next to hungry rats and realizing that doesn't count as non-lethal. It's been fun. There's not much to talk about for it though. It's just like revisiting how like well designed the levels are and how each level has like essentially a thematic like it has essentially a thematic element or mechanical element, especially in the later levels, that is tied into that one exclusively. I just finished going through an area in the Dust District where you're playing through a sandstorm. And so you have the incentivization of like taking cover while these sandstorms blow through, but they also provide you with like visual protection. So you can be like take more aggressive movements in an otherwise exposed space because the dust has made it difficult to see. Or like previous to that, working with the Jindosh Manor, I think in chapter 4, where it's a bunch of like interchangeable rooms that like transform based on the pulls of a lever. And what's really nice about that is because this is a real-time game where things are shifting. There's a lot of like opportunities that you don't see in many other games to essentially like jump into the changing frameworks and get into the like guts of the interchangeable or clockwork mansion. Yeah, it's really cool. It's just made me nostalgic for playing a really, really well crafted and I think more original IP. And of course, that inspired me to also play some Skyrim this weekend, which...
Opposite ends of the spectrum.
I know. It both published by Bethesda, but I don't know. I picked it up on a whim, and I thought...
That's how they get you.
I know. I thought if I play it entirely differently from how I normally do, maybe I could like derive some more pleasure and entertainment. Because I've really had this, you know, I've been bit by this D&D bug, and I don't want to spend all my time on Divinity Original Sin when I have other people that I'm playing it with or will be playing it with. The single player experience, I don't know. I don't want to spoil anything.
Have you checked out the DM mode for Divinity?
Oh, you know, I'm aware of it, but I haven't actually looked into it, and I need to.
Oh, it's nifty.
Yeah, and I think it's... It looks like it's really, really, if you're willing to spend the time, it's like a really detailed way to essentially create your own like maps and combat encounters and whatnot. You just have to work within the framework that Divinity sets, but it leaves like, I guess, a lot of flexibility.
You say DM, but it's just like a campaign editor, right?
Yeah.
Kind of. So... It is a campaign editor. Yeah, no, it's literally a campaign editor where mm-hmm. you're putting down the NPCs, if that NPC is a shop, what they're going to be selling. You've got different areas of the map that you can hobble together to say, okay, you're in town. This is the overarching map of the town. If you want to leave town, then it brings you to an overworld where you can have the entire world built out. But until... the characters actually do a certain flag, that part of the map is not like revealed to the characters to be able to mm-hmm. go in and out of.
I mean, it's so, yeah. RPG Maker, right? It's a game that happens to come with its own RPG Maker element, which I always think is cool.
I just wanted to make sure it wasn't like a mode that enabled you to also oversee someone as they're playing your campaign and then change things or influence things as they go.
Ooh,
because that's what I would see like a DM as, a DM mode. You set the campaign, and then you kind of get, what would it be called, like director's mode in Left 4 Dead?
It would
you can change minor things, like, hey, you know what, these guys have scaled up like a little stronger than I expected them to. Maybe I'm going to add these enemies into the next encounter to spice things up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, that totally makes sense. So yeah, it's more of a level editor because I don't think you have that much control unless, say, the people that are running it, like you're running it with friends, are going through it with friends, and you notice that you guys are just kind of running through all the encounters. Unless it's like, okay, we're ending tonight here, then you just go into the level editor and pop in seven more.
There's no arch on teams. The fly.
I mean, it's a lot to expect.
That would be super difficult, but it'd be very appealing. I don't actually know of any game that gives you that kind of option to, I guess, mimic the sort of like D&D or tabletop style that isn't, or I should say, I don't know any video game or like digital interface like that. Like the best you can do is either use Tabletop Simulator, right? And run it in Tabletop Simulator. But in that case, you're simulating a tabletop game, so it doesn't necessarily count.
You don't have the same great degree of like AI and UI and so forth that Divinity Original Sin 2 would have.
You're doing all of it manually in a digital space, which is very different. I don't know. I haven't played anything new, and I haven't done anything all that novel or interesting, I think, recently. And that's because I just feel like we're kind of in a lull where I'm not motivated to go back to Fire Emblem Three Houses currently and finish up any of the remaining routes. Skyrim has made me depressed for video games again because you really can only do like 4 or 5 hours before it starts to feel very, very stale. And Dishonored has been really good, and I'll probably put more time back into that. I'm excited to complete this route and then try a... I think it's mostly Flesh and Steel is the name of the achievement, in which you don't take any of the like void powers in the game. And playing as a human without any special abilities should make it a lot more difficult. Have to make some more hard choices, and the combat should be pretty adrenaline inducing, because you don't have, there's no easy way out.
I like it. I actually saw a commercial yesterday for Dishonored 2 and thought to myself, oh yeah, I've got that game.
And
I should probably play it.
I remember the last time you tried to play it, you're having display issues. When I booted it up recently, I also had a display issue. I went in to the to the graphical settings and adjusted the display issue, or like adjusted the display back to the original settings that they were at. Like essentially I was at, I think, you know, the 1080 by 1920 or whatever. I moved to a different resolution, then I moved back to that and I applied it and it didn't fix anything, but then I closed the game, I reopened it, and it was fine. So
nice. I shouldn't also have display issues anymore, because I
new monitor.
With those display issues, I moved from playing PC games on my TV to on an actual computer monitor, so that should just get rid of all that now.
Okay. Yeah, it's a phenomenal game. I have to say, like, it shouldn't have tempted me to try and play some Elder Scrolls, but it did just a little bit, because it feels so good, and I'm like, I wanna play another game that has that has some like core, I guess some core elements the same, but not really. There's no comparing the two of them, besides the fact that they're first person games published by Bethesda that have some sort of like fantasy setting.
It's always a mistake going to Skyrim.
Yeah.
It's always a mistake.
It makes me excited for all the projects that Arcane will have coming down the pike. They only have one that I can think of that was previewed at the last E3, which, if I remember correctly, it's the two two assassins like trying to kill each other.
Oh yeah.
Deathloop. That's what it is. Deathloop. Yeah. I'm interested in that. And maybe, I don't know, I'll actually see, because I know they also did Prey, and I thought Prey was okay. It just felt like, it felt clumsy when I played it, but I also tried to do a completely human playthrough, so I'm going to see if maybe playing around with the, I forget what they call the aliens in that game again, but the...
aliens.
Try and use some of the alien powers, because I'm just so sold on how good the Dishonored games are. And I'll try and, next time there's a sale, pick up Death of the Outsider and see how that expansion is.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have been playing a couple of different games. But before that, I just started downloading the Call of Duty download. And I was super excited to see that whole... what they've been talking about with the PlayStation 5 and the Xbox One future of, hey, we don't know how much memory we're going to be getting, but you can download specific parts of the game.
Mm-hmm.
I was super excited to see that when I went to go download Call of Duty Modern Warfare, it was like, okay, you've got, I think it was like 8 files to download,
mm-hmm.
and you could choose which ones you wanted to download. It separated the campaign into two separate chunks of like, I think it was like... between 7 and 10 gigabytes each.
Mm-hmm.
Then it separated, had a multiplayer download, which was 10 gigs. It had the Spec Ops download separated into two. One was like 10, one was 5. And then it had two survival modes.
Right. And you don't want to forget the weapon download, because the game gets just way too hard.
But that made me like super excited for like, okay, this is what they meant by, if you want to just download the campaign, you can download the campaign. And then you could delete the campaign, because you don't care about the updates to what's happening to the campaign mode. So gone are the days of having the file sizes be 150 gigabytes.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause all you're using is 10 gigs of the actual software. So that was pretty fun. Pretty interesting.
It is, especially
a nice surprise this morning.
I think 'cause I saw a commercial recently for the newest Call of Duty, and it seemed like it was really trying to capitalize on, they wrote like a really big, expansive and interesting story having to do with chemical weapons or something.
Probably.
Yeah.
I'm excited for to finally being able to play the story.
Mm-hmm. Chemical weapons that turn people into zombies.
Ah, okay.
A biohazard. No. I don't know that.
Well, I mean, it's no more ridiculous than the premise that you, this one soldier man, essentially travel all around the world to stop these chemical weapons with your trusty, like, M16.
I always found it strange that, like, it hasn't become a character at this point, like a Sam Fisher or a Solid Snake.
That way they can kill him off just in case, though. Because Call of Duty Modern Warfare did do that, where your character, dies in the helicopter crash and sees the aftermath.
Well, at the very, very beginning.
It's not like the very beginning, though. It's like after a...
Modern Warfare? Yeah.
It's after like a chapter or two, right?
The helicopter crash after the nuke?
Yeah.
Yeah, the nuke was the very beginning. That was like the first mission, followed by a nuclear explosion.
Oh, okay. Maybe I was mistaken.
Press
then.
X to mourn.
Okay, yeah.
Sorry.
I moved on too quick. I remember that being a good, an effective twist, at least when I was a teenager, though. I was like, what do you mean my character's dead? I beat the level. I don't understand.
F to pay respects.
Yeah.
Yes, that's what it is.
I mean, it would be X on...
you pay your respects. And, yeah.
Oh, yeah. But besides that, I have low-key kind of fallen in love with Xbox Game Pass.
Mm-hmm.
I decided to spend the dollar, or one of my friends was talking to me about getting on to Sea of Thieves, and they donated me a dollar and said, hey, just get Xbox Game Pass on your PC. It's a dollar for a month.
Did they Venmo it to you or whatever, the pay app?
No, they handed me a physical dollar and said, do this, get this game. And let me tell you guys, if this game had come out this year, it'd be my game of the year. It is low-key the most boring and yet most exhilarating fun I have ever had in a video game.
Is it like, in a weird way, kind of like playing Skyrim? Like, ignore the parts of Skyrim that have to do with the RPG and stat stuff. I'm talking about gameplay-wise. Is it kind of like a Skyrim game, but just multiplayer? First person, interact with your environment. You shoot and you slash things.
And you shout.
Yeah, it's basically that, but instead we're going to take away the UI of Skyrim.
Right.
All you get is your health bar and how many bullets you have at the time. And you can only carry 5 bullets no matter which weapon you have. There is no RPG element to it. So you are max strength,
mm-hmm.
but you are not max skill, because you as the player have to gain the skills of being able to do these swashbucklery things. It literally... it's kind of like The Long Dark, in a sense of, it drops you on to this space and says, hey, it now has a tutorial that apparently did not exist when the game first came out, mm-hmm. because nothing existed when the game first came out. But it quite literally says, hey, this is the main shopkeep guy. This is how you accept quests. These are the different shops that you have to go to. This is where you turn in chests when you find them. And then it just lets you be free. I will say soloing this game is a fucking nightmare, because everything is dangerous to you. Everything. Humans, not humans. That's pretty much all that really exists in this game. But it's like, it's nice to just say, okay, I'm going to play some Sea of Thieves. You jump in, you're dropped off at one of the 5 random outposts in the game. And before you enter in the game, you pick what size ship you're going to be doing. If you're soloing, you're going to be doing the...
The skiff.
If you've got up to 3 players can be in a sloop, and 4 players can be in a brig. Each ship controls very, very differently. The sloop is like the fastest, but it's got that weird 2-man slooping is nice and interesting, but things can still kind of go haywire. But 3-man slooping is just perfect. And each time you jump in the game, it's quite literally like, okay, I'm going to jump in, maybe do a little bit of fishing, maybe go to random islands. It's a very big world with not a lot in it, but each time you jump on and get in an island, there's the possibility of you seeing a message in a bottle that then gives you a quest to like solve riddles once you get to a specific island. It'll have just a treasure map, which is quite literally a picture of an island with X's on it saying that there is treasure in these areas. So then you have to figure out which island it is, and then quite literally using a physical compass that you have to pull out of your inventory mm-hmm. and look at it to say, okay, I need to go south by southeast. So there's no overworld map that you can choose from. It's quite literally on your ship. There is a physical map that you then push X or push whatever button to interact with the map. And then you can kind of scroll around the map to then set whatever destination you're looking for. And then you've got to raise your anchor, lower your sails, point yourself in the right direction while keeping the sails into the wind. And it is the most boring, fun thing.
Right. There's no fast traveling. You gotta work the boat all yourself.
Yes. And I realized as I was kind of playing by myself, I was like, okay, this is kind of boring because I'm not really being social with anybody. Mm-hmm. But then things get out of hand very quickly. And I was like, and all of it's done by musical cues.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay, this is the nice going fast on the sea and everything's good. Wait, I've never heard this musical cue before. What is this? And then there's a giant tentacle that comes out of the water, followed by several others. And now I'm surrounded by a kraken.
Mm-hmm.
I got killed by a kraken. Then there's the megalodon that's around. And it is just a great time. They recently introduced a new raid into the game.
Mm-hmm.
And since everyone is max level, as long as you've got a group with you, you can raise your alliance flag to say, hey, let's team up with other crews and let's do the raid. Because you're not going to be level capped out of a raid because you don't have good enough gear. All the gear is cosmetic.
Is there,
it's literally all cosmetic.
Is there a limit to... Is there like a certain number of people you need in order to perform these raids? Is there a cap to how many people can participate in one?
From what I've seen, no. The last time that we did it, we ended up doing it... I've done it twice. Mm-hmm. The first time it was me and one of my friends that I was on with, so we were a 2-man crew.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a brig of 4 people and a sloop with 3 people just all with us. The second time we did it, we were a 4-man crew, and there were 3 other brigs of 4-man crews doing the raid with us. So it's quite literally just as many people want to alliance up.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that this game is not everyone let's be friends. It is... how long can we be friends for before the call of treasure becomes too much? Who's going to betray whom first?
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you, there is no such thing as the game not having anyone betray anybody. Because the first time we did it, the guys we were playing with were real cool. So the dude who gave me the dollar who was like, you know what? These guys are super cool. We'll let them have the super good chests. We'll let them have most of the loot, and we'll just take our couple of things, and we will not betray them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, their ship ended up sinking during the raid.
Uh-huh.
So we were all loading all of our loot onto our boat, so that way we could ferry them to shore to get to a thing, get to an outpost, and sell their loot.
Right.
Because we were like, this is fine. Well, we didn't realize that one of their guys had died. So he then started coming back with their ship to the area. So while we're loading on loot...
So their ship respawns after it sinks?
Yes. Okay. All the ships respawn at a nearby outpost. So their ship respawned. They were like, oh yeah, no, thanks, cool. Thanks for letting us catch a ride since our ship's dead. And we're like, yeah, that's no problem. And then next thing you know, I'm loading up a powder keg barrel, which is a barrel apparently worth a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So we were loading these up, but if you shoot them, they explode and they do a lot of damage to your ship.
Mm-hmm.
I'm loading up these barrels and then next thing you know, I die. And Clay's like, the guy I'm with is like, oh God, Cookie, what happened? I was like, I died. I think I accidentally set off a barrel. And he's like,
you didn't accidentally do it.
I did not accidentally do it, because whenever you die, depending on how you die, you get put onto a ghost ship,
mm-hmm,
where there is a flame in the middle. If you hold your lantern up to the flame, you can choose to take a flame. Depending on how you die, certain deaths trigger certain color flames to appear. He's like, I was like, nope, I accidentally killed myself because I've done it before.
Because,
mm-hmm, you know, day two of playing this game. And he's like, oh, okay. And then I tell him, oh, well, this is interesting. He's like, what? My flame is pink. He's like, fuck.
It's a retribution flame.
It's a gangplank barrel.
Yes. Pink flame means that another player has killed you.
Uh-oh.
In order to do this raid, your ship has to have all the colored flames. So you have to die by shark, by snake, by getting hit by a giant lava rock, getting struck by lightning. And I think there's like one more other shark, snake, player, flame, lightning. So yeah, those are the five colors. White, blue, purple, pink, and some other color. Red.
So what happens after you die? Like, you're on this ghost ship.
You're on this ghost ship. There's a little bit of a spawn timer. You hear the toll of the dead, and then the ghost ship's door to the captain's office opens. You walk through, and you respawn. And since our boat had sank because of all the powder kegs we had on it, I spawned on a faraway island with the boat. I looked at the map because we were still in an alliance, and I saw that their boat was almost there. And I was like, at this point, the guy I was with, he is a PvP monster, had killed the other guys that were with us, but they were spawning on their boat at this point, so it was kind of a losing battle.
Mm-hmm.
So we tried to hunt them down. Their ship was faster. We lost all our treasure. And it's sad. The next time we did it, we were the first to betray people.
So there's a first mover advantage in this, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, but no, it was a... It's a very fun social game. If you've got a dollar, I suggest. If you've got a dollar and you are using PC, just get the Xbox Game Pass for a day. Sure, you've got to go through the Xbox launcher. Have some friends who do the same and just go on an adventure. The riddles for the riddles that the quests are kind of low key difficult. Especially if you don't know the world and what each island actually is. Mm. The combat is okay, but just the social interaction of it all is wonderful. So you can pull out music instruments, and depending if someone pulls out a music instrument, they'll start playing a song. If someone else pulls out a music instrument, like a different one or the same one, they'll join in playing the same song in unison.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have a full band of a banjo, a hurdy-gurdy, drum, organ, and I forget what the last instrument is, but either way, it's just a great time of just interacting and being. It's kind of like how a lot of people describe their time as playing Destiny 2, just the time to zone out and play with friends.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really get that with Destiny 2 because it was constantly action and you're grinding and you're doing a bunch of stuff. Whereas this one is quite literally just, yeah, let's just hang out with friends. Let's get a boat and just go. And at worst case scenario, we run into some things where we have to actually be serious. And at best case scenario, it's quite literally just a, oh, cool, there's a sunken ship right there. Let's go see if there's any good treasure on it. Fuck it.
Right, but the downtime is actually giving you an opportunity to just interact socially. And that, yeah, and that's baked into the concept of trying to travel across the water to whatever your objectives are.
Yeah, and it's quite literally the most boring fun I've ever had. Because as I was playing with my group the other day, I was just like, you know what? This game is low-key boring, as I was swimming slowly towards the ship with a giant treasure chest in my hand. Mm-hmm. But I'm also having a lot of fun. Thanks for giving me a dollar, guys. I'm going to miss you in the next couple of days when Call of Duty comes out and I abandon all of you. Because let's not get it twisted. But it did. The game was on sale for $10 cheaper the last week or so. So I did end up just purchasing it because I was like, yeah, I enjoy this enough to get that done. That's the main game I've been playing is Sea of Thieves. And I decided to get my exercise on a little bit more. So I've pumped out the quest even more. I got Kingspray, which is, my God, if you like to do graffiti, it's great. It is a graffiti game, quite literally, that you choose your setting. So you've got a couple of different wall options, and you've got all the fucking colors of, like, brand names, spray paint companies.
Right, red, blue, yellow, and white.
Crayola. And then you've got the different types of caps that you actually buy in real life. And they react mostly real. So there's no like real cursors or anything. It's quite literally just you and a wall. If you've got images uploaded to your quest, you can pull out a virtual phone and access the images to then be able to like say, okay, this is kind of what I'm planning on putting on this wall. So I am working right now on a physical piece in my garage of a wall.
But you can map it out.
And to better understand the piece that I'm doing, I'm mapping it out in Kingspray right now. And it's glorious. It feels nice. I've got a lot more access to colors than in real life because each can cost money. Whereas in the game, it's quite literally, okay, I know I need this color in the Montana with this cap to make this effect. So now I'm like quite literally like just checking off a list of colors I'm going to need and caps I'm going to need. And they've got the most common caps that you can buy, which have got like tons of caps. So that's no problem. And it feels glorious. Mm-hmm. I've been playing Kingspray, and then the last thing I've been playing is a Knockout League.
Is that a boxing
which
game?
It is a cartoony boxing game. And I will be honest with you, I'm sore.
You're not supposed to take punches in the virtual reality.
I'm just sore from throwing all these punches. If I can, I've decided that on top of doing the Knockout League every day, at least a full set of like the training regiment. So there's the speed bag, there's the punching bag, the heavy bag, there's like this reflex game I really like. To where it's quite literally it shoots balloons at you. So blue balloons you have to punch with your left hand, right balloons you punch with your right. You block volleyballs and you dodge dumbbells. So I'll do the speed bag, followed by the heavy bag, followed by the reflex game, and then I'll do one official match. And that takes usually about 20 minutes or so.
Is that P2P or is it PvE?
PvE.
Okay.
And so that usually gets me a good sweat, and then I'll spend the night doing 45 minutes at night doing either Dance Central or Beat Saber. But I've decided with the Sports Fit, Ring Fit Adventures, there we go. I ended up, that's just came out, apparently.
Right.
So I just ordered it on Amazon, so we will see if that kind of just takes over my fitness regimen.
I'm very interested to see how durable the ring actually is.
From what I've seen,
I imagine very durable.
Like, just watching videos of people playing mm-hmm. that, they are actively straining. So, you know, like that, you know, you can see a person phone it in with like a pull or a push motion.
Oh, yeah.
But when they start, when their hands are shaking in opposite directions as they're doing it,
or their veins are just bulging, or they,
you know, they're straining,
or they make the expression Neil has on his face right now.
That's more of a comatose dead face. Well,
yeah,
at the moment.
on the edge of life. then you know they're putting their all into it.
Yeah, that's kind of been my gaming repertoire at the moment. Just a whole lot of Sea of Thieves until Friday, mm-hmm. because that game is great. And like I said, I kind of fell in love with. The Xbox Game Pass, since a lot of the games work on the PC. So I've also been playing a little bit of Forza Horizon 4, mm-hmm. which is, oh my god, I miss racing games so badly. So it's going to be a tough decision next year when they say, hey, do you want the new Xbox? Do you want the new PlayStation? Or do I just switch to PC gaming at that point? And then just do Xbox Game Pass for both me and Lizzie. So that way we get all the Xbox games that I'd want to play, and we've constantly got new fresh games to play. And with Call of Duty being a super cross-platform, yeah. it's quite literally just buy her a controller, and now she's playing on PC the way she normally plays anyway, with a controller, and then we're matched up with other people with controllers. I don't know what I'm going
to
do.
We'll definitely start the bets on how long it takes you to get all three.
Well, you would have lost because I don't have an Xbox.
I know you don't, but
Lizzie refuses to let me get one of those. Otherwise, I may have switched over to being an Xbox person over the year. But like after watching and reading a bunch of videos, and I've joined a gamer group at my work and kind of talking to them about like the news and things.
Yeah.
It turns out a lot of people did the same thing I did, which was we were all PlayStation 2, went to Xbox 360, straight to PlayStation 4.
And I actually did that too, now that I think about it. No, I absolutely followed that same path. Like, no Xbox One. I did, the PlayStation 3 was like it was a family console, so I don't count it as much. And then
I got
bought
a
PlayStation 4.
I got a free PlayStation 3, which is why I had one. But yes, no, PlayStation 4, the console's decisions were PlayStation 2, Xbox 360,
PlayStation 4.
And a lot of people are like, I don't think I'm going to go back to Xbox. And I know I won't get an Xbox Scarlet, whatever it mm-hmm. is, but the main choice that I'm having to make now is, do I go in, get two PlayStation 5s, or do I just continue to use these souped up PCs that me and my wife have, that she doesn't use hers at all, to then do our gaming on that rather than, because that just makes more sense.
Well, I think Neil's big question that he's been meaning to ask is, what about that Stadia that you're going to have?
See, and Stadia is going to follow suit right with the fucking PC. Because that's going to be the main thing I play it on, rather than, I guess I'll play it on my Chromecast, because it's going to work with mm-hmm. that. And, oh my god, speaking of Stadia, if it is everything I want it to be, my next phone that I've been looking at might be a Pixel. So maybe Stadia might be
okay.
the thing that I go yeah. with. Because that Pixel 4 looks sexy.
I don't know much about the Pixel phones, but I do have a friend who picked one up and seems to enjoy it quite a bit. So I haven't heard any negatives, at least.
Yeah, it looks sexy. Oh, And I guess I never even talked about this, but Fancy Ramen listeners, I beat a video game. I beat Borderlands 3.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's a big game, actually, isn't it? I mean, that's a fair amount of time to invest.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a very big game. It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed my entire time through it. I just watched a video on the New Game Plus mode, and is it worth it? And the answer is no. So I will not be going to New Game Plus, but I will continue to play with my wife and my brother using the different characters, because I like, honestly, the interactions that the Volt Hunters are having with the other characters. That's the thing that's made me want to like really play with my wife, because she's using a character she's not using Flak. So hearing Amara's responses to things has been interesting, mm-hmm. comparatively to what Flak has been saying. Because mm-hmm. Flak is a robot, but he's also a pervert, but like in the best way.
You're going to have to give some context there.
So Flak meets, oh my God, what is her name? Ellie? Ellie from the Catcher Ride? I think her name is Ellie. Catch a ride. Yeah, Ellie from the Catcher Ride. And his response to her is quite literally, she's like, as she gets done doing her little explanation, she goes, "And what are you looking at, Sugar Lips?" And he's like, "Well, most humans seem frail, but you, girl, you've got some girth." And I forgot what he said to Moxie, but he commented on her tits. Whereas Amara is playing everything much more straight-laced, mm-hmm. because she's not a pervert. Mm-hmm. So he says things in like all the best ways, and then just hearing some of how Moxie is really digging Zero, one of the Volt Hunters from Part 2 that you could have been. And Zero really likes a different character, so they have really awkward interactions. And it's just wonderful just hearing how all the characters interact differently. So Flak says different things than Amara. Amara's more straight-laced, and she's also a siren, so Lizzie hasn't gotten quite far enough for like all the siren-y things to happen, mm-hmm. but I'm curious as to what is going to go on in those interactions, because Flak doesn't have much to say about that. He's just like, "Oh, you're glowing. That's cool." Because he's not a siren, right. Whereas there's like, these are the things that should be happening for all sirens. There's only supposed to be so many of them. Why is one of them a guy? Yada, yada, yada. And the twists at the end are just wonderful. You do get a fake game over screen during this game, followed by a real game over screen later. Well, by a real the end screen later.
Okay.
Due to actually beating the game, and it ends on Alicia Keys's "This Girl Is on Fire." And then after the credits roll, it's like, okay, lots of shit to do still left on Pandora. Get to it. Chop, chop.
And it rolls you into New Game Plus.
No. It says, even though, spoiler alert, Lilith is gone, there's still lots of things to do in the world, in the universe. Get to it. By the way, one of those artifacts that you picked up is an ancient piece of tech that allows for simulated combat. So you can plug this into this instrument, and it then makes all the planets that you're going to more challenging, because it's going to have simulated enemies on top of real enemies. And those simulated enemies are basically just more things. And the character calls them Mayhem Crystals. Mm-hmm. You can have up to 3 levels of mayhem mode in Borderlands, and each level of mayhem mode is going to be more intense enemies. Everything's going to still level up with mm-hmm. you. Better loot drops, harder enemies to fight, and everything's just going to be crazy. So I even like how the fact that they're like, hey, you can change the difficulty mode now, but we've got a lore slash story reason behind it rather than you just click a menu button. Either way, I beat Borderlands 3. I enjoyed the story. I enjoyed the Neil had a question about Penn and Teller being on the thing, and yeah, you don't hear Teller's voice at all, but
surprise.
You know he's there in spirit.
There is some heavy breathing from his character.
Is there really?
No, I don't know.
I mean, if you cannot provide me with an image of him in a VO booth for no reason at all, I don't believe the credits. I can believe Penn, especially if his voice is in the game. But
his voice is in the game, and it took me a little bit of time to realize, but Ice-T is also in the game.
No thanks, I only drink wonderful. It hot.
But yeah, so like hearing characters' voices is great, but no, you don't hear his voice. You know what? I wonder if you can find him in a VO booth.
I'm looking up the images, and actually I may note that it's not, he's a robot, yes, but it's actually using his face, kind of.
Yeah, they do look like Penn and Teller.
Okay, so maybe you would have to pay him for his likeness here. So I thought when you said he was like a robot, I assumed he was like a claptrap fucking robot, you know?
No, I said he was not a robot. I said he was a, they are both humans.
But like a little person enemy, was it?
Yes, a little person enemy, because if you see the picture of Penn and Teller.
Yeah.
Pain and terror. Terror is literally up to Pain's waist.
Crotch. Yeah.
Yep. Either way. But no, I still can't see that. I could understand if just Penn was in something without Teller being around or associated, him just getting a paycheck. But I couldn't see them both being like slightly associated with something without both of them having something in, without Teller having something in his contract.
Yeah, no, I would only argue if you had it not been his face, his likeness on the character.
I can dig it. I'll take this win. I'll take this win and go away. Either way, Borderlands 3. It was a lot of fun. Will more than likely be my game of the year. I think his name is John Cho.
John Cho? Sorry? He cut out.
Yeah, John Cho, he's been injured in completely random news, and that's sad.
Oh, okay.
Because he's...
Spike.
Yeah.
Because he's Spike.
As filming for the Netflix movie production of Cowboy Bebop.
Yep, and they are very serious about him being Spike, so they have delayed the delayed shooting production for it.
Mm.
So yeah, so that's sad. In its own way.
Do you know what the injury is?
Knee injury.
While filming,
completely. Apparently, it was like a complete freak accident that was on a very mundane and completely rehearsed scene, and like the final actually good shot that they were going to be getting. He injured his knee. They flew him from wherever they're filming, which is not in the US, to LA to get knee surgery.
Wow.
And it's going to be an extensive from New Zealand to LA to get knee surgery. And it'll be an extensive recovery period.
We don't have to go down this rabbit hole because I think we did at one point in time. I always assumed Spike Spiegel was like a Caucasian, potentially like part Jewish character.
Why?
Because isn't Spiegel a Jewish name?
I guess it sounds German, doesn't it?
It does sound German. Yeah. I could have seen Spike as being Caucasian.
Spiegel, name, German and Jewish.
Yeah.
You got it.
Yeah, but if they made Spike white, then everyone would have been like, they're whitewashing.
But I don't think... I don't think the original intention of that show was to be a bunch of Japanese characters. I think Faye Valentine might be Japanese.
Faye is Japanese, and so is, and I think Ed is Chinese.
Yeah, I guess I could see that. Ed should honestly be a race of human that does not exist. One that doesn't
Chinese
have noses.
Chinese slash Indian.
What's that?
Chinese slash Indian, because I guess some of the way she speaks.
I don't know the Japanese, her Japanese VO that well. I just know her English VO being pretty third person-y.
I was talking her English VO being very kind of like East Asian or like India Asian.
Yeah, I can dig that. Like her, like if we're playing off of appearances here, like the fact that she has has darker skin than the other characters in the anime, like, would seem to indicate that she's likely not Caucasian or Japanese or Chinese for that matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, like, typically Chinese characters in anime and Japanese characters in anime have pale as fuck skin unless they're garu. Unless they're gals, you know.
Oh my gosh. This. Oh no. Not that.
I think we might be going a little long for,
No, yeah, no.
If Scott needs to warm up and not destroy his elbow this weekend.
My elbow's always fine.
It's his shoulder.
It's my back and shoulder.
If you have comments, questions, or corrections, podcast@fancyramen.com.
Don't hesitate to watch Neil Twitch at twitch.tv/fancyramen TV.
I might literally be twitching too, depending on the stomach pain.
I am going to start actually twitching a lot more often starting next week with the release of Call of Duty at twitch.tv/ Cookie Skimilk, CUKISKMILK. And I am pretty sure Jay Frey All Day still exists, so you know, catch him there. Why not?
Please tell your friends about the Fancy Ramen Podcast. Best way to grow our listenership, and it's greatly appreciated by the three of us.
Have a good week, everybody. I'm going to go and try not to die.
Na-na-na-na, boo-boo.
Yeah, we'll find out based on the episode title. If it's Neil Beefs It, we at least know that his final his final act was to finish editing and publish it.
Finish editing and publish.
All right, see you later, guys.
Bye.
Have a good one.
Bye.